/invite. This is Kristen, and you're listening to episode 3 of the Online Gamers Anthology.
Hello there. Welcome to Uber Rogers Neighborhood. Yesterday we talked a little bit about how to sneak up and kill new players in the town square. Can you say owned? I knew you could. Sounds like someone's at the guild hall door. That could be Chef Brocket bringing us his new crafting recipe. Well, 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 if it ain't little Uber Rogers. Well, I don't know who this is, but he certainly looks grumpy.
Oh, you don't know who I am, huh? How about I'm a guildmate of that poor guy you player killed in Tersh Village yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That sure felt good, doing that. Good feelings make us happy.
Oh, so you think it's funny to gank somebody at the crafting stations, huh? You didn't even warn him. You just nailed him in the back with a two-handed sword.
Yeah.
Sometimes we feel angry, and those kinds of feelings make us hurt inside.
What the?
You know, my mother used to say that anger only makes things worse, and then we should feel happy again.
What the heck does that mean?
Sometimes singing a song makes us more cheerful. Do you like to sing songs? Do they make you feel better?
You gotta be kidding.
You know, I do feel better. I don't feel so mad now.
Don't listen to him, Ratuk. He's trying to get inside your mind.
No, that's not true.
Oh, you think you're so smart, huh? Wearing your little magic sweater and your +2 loafers of invisibility? That's how you did it, isn't it? You cloaked yourself with your sweater and PK'd our friend.
Yeah, that's lame.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when bad things happen, I like to go for walks.
You know what, Rogers? You ain't nothing but a little wuss.
I'm sorry. Do you want to come say that to my face?
Ooh. Why don't you bring it?
Yeah.
How about you come out here?
How about you come in here if you're so leet?
Yeah, nice try. I see those two stone golems behind you. I step into your guild hall, they aggro me on sight.
Can you say chicken?
Chicken?
Shut up, Frankie.
I knew you could.
All right, Rogers, you want to play that way? How about a fireball spell to the face?
That's a nice shot. Except that my sweater's impervious to flame. But you want to throw down? You want to bring it? All right. I'll send you to the land of make-believe. How about you try this one on for size?
Watch it.
He's summoning a bat!
Oh, no!
How about saying hello to my trolley elemental?
What the... Oh no!
Ah!
Billy's down! Billy's down!
I can't feel my longsword!
My diplomacy deck is on fire!
I'm still not angry!
You know, that's good. We've learned a good lesson today.
I'm reporting you the GMs, you know.
My life.
And that lesson is that you never want to get all up in my face. Now, don't you feel better about everything you learned? Are you ready to start being a good guild neighbor?
I forget it, they ain't giving us a big enough XP bonus for this one.
Can you say owned? I knew you could.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Online Gamers Anthology, the podcast where we, all together now,
where we look back at the online games from back in the day and the games that influenced them.
I want to go home.
I'm your host, Jonathan, and today's episode, we're going to be talking about computer bulletin boards, or BBSs, as we called them back in the day. For those of you out there who have had experiences with BBSs or maybe played BBS games back in the day, you're probably like, yay! But those of you who have never heard of them and are probably wondering what in the world I'm even talking about, stay tuned because you're going to hear a part of online gaming history that you probably didn't even know existed. But first up, I'm going to talk real quick about what I've been playing and what I've been up to. Well, lately, I've been playing a lot of Lord of the Rings Online, which is a great game. Whether or not you're a Tolkien fan, if you're a Tolkien fan, you're going to eat it up because they do a great job of sticking right close to the lore, because it's based on the book. For those of you who haven't played it, you ought to check it out. It's such a good game. And those of you playing the game, make sure you check out Ringcast. That's a podcast that's part of this podcast collective, and it's done by Lady Sinea, who does a fantastic job. She keeps you up to date with all the news coming out and shares her views on the game. So if you haven't already checked it out because it is a great podcast. Another game I've been checking out, and I don't know how many of you out there have tried this one yet. There's a game out there by NCSoft. Those are the guys who do Lineage and the soon-to-be Tabula Rasa. They have a game that's free to play called Dungeon Runners. And I admit, I checked this game out, and I had more fun with that stupid little game than I have had in a long time. It's a great game to just bust out right after work, clear the palate a bit, maybe play with a few friends. It's a lot like Diablo, the little point-and-click style. Actually, I guess you could almost say it's a lot like Guild Wars 2. Well, not Guild Wars 2, but like Guild Wars also. But it's got very cartoony graphics, kind of the same style as World of Warcraft. But it's great because it's a big parody game that pokes fun at other online games. Like, for example, the weapons have the most hilarious names. Like, you'll find one of the weapons is the giant pizza cutter of never-ending destiny. And you gotta love a game that can come up with names like that. Or, like, Cleaver of the Naked Monkey. You can't buy that kind of stuff. That's great. Again, it's free to play, too, so check it out. I've also, of course, been playing Vanguard. Love that game. I've just about wrapped up playing Bioshock as well, which is a good thing because I have never-ending nightmares now. And I will never go near the water, and if I ever have anything to say about it, my children will never have swimming lessons. No, seriously, though, that's a great game. Also got a great story to share with you this week. The other day, my job has me traveling around quite a bit. Well, the other day, while we were out working, me and a guy I work with stopped at a place called Del Taco. I'm not sure if you guys have that anywhere but here out west. But Del Taco, you can almost think of it as basically like a Taco Bell. Well, we were at Del Taco. While we were talking, we look up, and all of a sudden we realized we recognized the people in front of us. It was Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. And if those names don't sound familiar, they're the ones who wrote the Dragonlance trilogy, the Chronicles, and also the Legend series. They're also the ones who invented the first Ravenloft campaign. Now, I'm somebody who, you know, color me curious on this one. I'm somebody who considers the Dragonlance trilogy to be pretty much above Lord of the Rings. Don't get me wrong, I love Lord of the Rings. But there was something about the Dragonlance trilogy which pretty much set the stage for all the things I did from then on out. It was Dragonlance. My father actually read the books and passed them on to me when I was very young. And I sat down and read those stinking books and never feared a giant book ever after that. That's what kind of started up my interest in fantasy gaming and role-playing games, which, of course, later led to online games. So we got to kind of sit down and talk with them a little bit. Very nice people, both of them. We told him we were big fans, shook his hand, said, "Great to meet you." It was kind of cool because he said he'd stop for lunch. Him and his wife, I guess, are working on a new book. They actually live here in St. George, where I live. I heard that he lived here in St. George, but, you know, you never believe stuff like that. I have friends who are like, "I live near Walter Matthau." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? You live in Idaho." So it was pretty cool to be able to run into him at this Del Taco and talk to him for a minute. You know, kind of cool side story. Anybody who's a fantasy fan would know that, you know, that's a pretty cool thing to have happen on your lunch break. But I digress. Anyways, back to computer BBSs now. So to start out, we're going to talk a little bit about what a BBS actually is.
You hear that, little Judy? Today we're going to learn about BBSs.
Golly, mister, I've never even heard of a BBS before.
Well, Jonathan here is going to tell you all about them, and soon you'll know all about where online gaming came from.
Gee, that's swell.
So what is a computer bulletin board, or BBS? Long story short, not to give the textbook answer here, but basically it's a piece of software running on a computer, basically like a server, where somebody who is a user can call in with a terminal program, dial through the phone line, and interact with this server program. Okay, that may have been just a tad too textbook, so let me back up a step. Those of you out there who've ever had a 56K dial-up line for your internet, or maybe had AOL back in the day, you've already got the concept pretty much down. You had a modem in your computer that linked into your phone line. From there, you brought up a little program on your desktop that enabled you to dial out to a local server. You'd hear this momentary squeal of the two modems together. You probably remember the sound of that. It sounds a lot like my neighbors trying to start their car. And from there, once you logged in, you were all of a sudden open up to this whole online world. That's pretty much the way how BBSs were. Once you logged into a BBS, you were able to send email, you were able to be part of little message boards, or you could, of course, play online games. You're probably thinking this sounds a lot like the internet, and you'd be exactly right. You could pretty much call BBSs the precursor to the internet. In fact, as we go through this episode, you're going to see a lot of places where a lot of the internet-type stuff we have today, like forums, like user forums, for example, or online games, or email, look like they probably got their start. The difference was that whereas the internet, there's a lot of people talking together at one time, back in the day, BBSs were usually limited to only one phone line. So basically, only one user could call in at any one time. There were a few BBSs out there that were multi-user, but those were usually owned by big corporations or somebody had way too much money. So hopefully after hearing that, you've got somewhat of an idea of what a BBS is. And now I'm going to give you a little bit of a history on where BBSs actually came from. The first computer bulletin board actually started way back in 1978 in Chicago, Illinois, by a guy named Ward Christensen. Ward Christensen was a guy who really enjoyed computers and was fascinated by the idea of maybe being able to have more than one computer talk to each other. So what he did was he wrote a software program that added a little protocol into it so that the computers could communicate over the phone. Voila! The first BBS it was ever made. Then in 1980s, as modems got faster and faster, the BBS idea suddenly started to take off quicker and quicker, and all of a sudden BBS programs started popping up all over the place, and suddenly everybody wanted to be part of the BBS world. Now, most of these BBSs were run by hobbyists, and they were somebody who had maybe a home computer in their house and were running this BBS off of one, maybe a second phone line. The person who ran the BBS was called a SysOp, or System Administrator, and he had full control over how his bulletin board ran. He could create forums to talk about things that he might like to talk about. He could create email for people. He could also take games that were either written by himself or by third-party people and add those into his games for his users as well. A lot of these BBSs started popping up with their own kind of themes. There were BBSs that were for, say, comic books. There were BBSs that were for things that were going on in the real world. And then, of course, corporations created BBSs so that people who worked for them could send email and keep up with current events with the corporation itself. And back then, most of the computers that these people were running these BBSs on were usually Apple computers. And then as time went on and the IBMs got really big, everything shifted over to the IBM-style computers. So how did a BBS compare to the internet? Well, first of all, when somebody called a bulletin board was pretty much text-based, meaning that you couldn't have any kind of pictures other than just regular text. Now, the cool thing with it was that there, as well as text, you had those little symbols that you can sometimes see on your keyboard, like the little parentheses or the asterisk, and you were able to make them a couple of different colors. And so people started getting creative, started taking these little text-based shapes and putting them together and making little pictures. And the same with the games. Basically, somebody could take a bunch of these little symbols, put them together, and next thing you know, you had a little tile-based RPG, which is what a lot of the online gamers who programmed the games for these BBSs did. So yeah, compared to the internet like we have today with all the pictures and streaming movies and streaming music, it may not seem like it was very cool back then with just plain text, but you know what? Back then, we had a riot with it. It was very, very cool back then to be able to know that you were actually talking on your computer with somebody else or maybe sending email to somebody else or playing a game with somebody else. But for me, the online games were the best part. It was really amazing to me back then that I could get online and play these role-playing games with another player. It was almost like being able to have the little pen and paper role-playing night, but you weren't actually having to have everybody be in the same house, and for back then, that was a big deal. So how did I get started in all of this? How did I get started into this whole BBS thing? Or as my father used to call it, the BBS BS thing. if only I was kidding. Well, I came into it a little bit late in the game. Around 1991, I had a friend named David Sperry who lived around the block for me. He was somebody I grew up with, and how could I explain David Sperry? Did you ever have a friend who you grew up with who was sort of like the crazy friend? He was always the kid in the neighborhood who did the really insane stuff that no one else would do. Like, you'd have all your friends up on the garage roof, and somebody would be betting somebody else that they wouldn't jump off the roof there. And of course, you know, your friend would be the one who jumped off and would be fine, and then your brother would jump off and break his legs. Yeah, that was David Sperry. David Sperry was the one who everybody knew would do the crazy stuff first, but that's what made him such a good friend, is he was just this cuckoo kid, and we loved it. But anyways, he and I both had Commodore 64s, and he managed to get a hold of what at that time we thought was really cool. It was actually a 300 baud modem. Okay, I'm going to back up and take a tangent here. To explain how fast this modem was, or I should say how slow this was, most of the modems that we had even back in the day, the 56K line kind of modems, 56K meant that it was 56,000 baud. So even back in the day, we were running at 56,000 speed, whereas with me and David, we had a little 300 speed, which meant that this little tiny cursor moved across the screen real slowly and drew all these little text things to us and all these little menus on these BBSs. And, you know, it was slow, but back then, we loved it. We loved the fact that we could go online with this. Well, back then, I had never been online before, and I went over David Sperry's house to spend the night. We were going to stay up late and play little Super Nintendo games, like, you know, like little kids did back then, before they had Halo. And that night, he showed me, on the modem, basically showed me how he could log into a nearby bulletin board. Well, I didn't know what a bulletin board was. All I knew was that he was somehow logging into this phone line and calling another computer. And, of course, the first thing I thought that was that the feds were probably going to end up on our doorstep the next day asking us just what the heck that we thought we were doing. So, at first, I was a little standoffish, like, oh, you don't have to show me. You don't have to show me. And what? Well, he, of course, being the crazy kid that he was, he said, oh, no, you have to see this. And so, what he did was he logged into the bulletin board for nearby computer store. And from there, I was a little bit fascinated. It did blow my mind a little bit that he was actually calling this place. And so from there, he had my interest. Well, a couple of days later, he came over my house, and we were all going to get together, him, my two friends, and my brother. We were just little kids back then. And we were going to get together and have a little pen and paper Ravenloft campaign. That back then, we loved to play the little D&D back then, and we loved good old-fashioned Ravenloft. So that's what we were playing that night. Well, of course, since I had my Commodore, he brought his modem over, and once again, we wanted to get online and now show my brother and show this other friend of ours. And so we logged into a little bulletin board that was nearby. I guess David, you know, it's funny, I can't even remember how David figured out how this number was there, but knowing how crazy he was, he probably just called every number in the phone book till he got a modem to answer. But this particular bulletin board was called Starfleet Command. Somebody had basically taken a bulletin board and patterned it off of the whole Star Trek theme. So when you logged in, you had this little picture of the Enterprise drawn with little graphics, little text graphics. And from there, you could log in and you were on the little messaging system. They had a giant menu that came up and basically said, where do you want to go? Did you want to go to... And each one of these little sections was a little Star Trek thing. But basically, they said, do you want to go to the message boards? Do you want to play games? Do you want to send emails? Or do you want to download files? Well, all of us were basically huddled around this computer thinking that this was the coolest thing we had ever seen. So, of course, what's the first thing we did? We headed for the games. So, next thing we know, we're on this online world of all these different games, and they had, on this particular BBS, we were fortunate, they had quite a few games. And they ranged from anything from little strategy games that you could play to little turn-based little fighting games. And we loved it. That night, we logged into a little RPG called Usurper. We played another game called Imperium, which was basically your turn-based strategy game from back then. And we were just blown away that we were playing this with other people. So this kind of became an obsession. We started getting together every night and playing these games, deciding how these kind of moves we would make, and we come back the next day just freaking out of what had happened while we were gone. Another game that we played was one called Legend of the Red Dragon, or they called it Lord for short. Basically, we played Legend of the Red Dragon quite a bit, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. So of course, after all this had happened, me being the kind of gamer that I was, I knew I had to be part of this BBS world. See, a lot of my upbringing, I was part of that Nintendo generation, of course, but a lot of my upbringing happened with the Atari 800 computer and the Commodore 64. So very early on, I got into the text adventure games like Zork, and so I loved games that basically you had to use your imagination for a great deal of it. But I also was really big on the quaint little games that may not have had good graphics, but they had a lot enough that you could kind of see what was going on, like the little strategy games that we played back then. So after that, I decided I wanted to run my own BBS. I thought there was something so very cool about the idea that I could have people call up to my particular computer system, and I could have these files that they could download. They could upload files to me. I could choose these little message boards and what we would talk about. And most of all, I got to handpick these games. And out there back then, there were games all over the place. People were popping these little games. This was back in the Pascal days, back when it didn't take too much work to make a game. I mean, nowadays you're looking at a ridiculous amount of time, but back then, people could do it fairly easily, as long as they were creative. So that summer, I set out basically my Commodore 64, started doing all kinds of research, and together me and David Sperry basically went out and started researching different BBS programs and trying them out. Funny enough, we even tried to dork around with programming our own, which looked good on paper, but when you finally got down to it was about as much fun as watching Little House on the Prairie. Well, right after this, lo and behold, David Sperry managed to get a hold of an IBM, and this was the IBM XT. This was the first generation IBM that had the little bitty 2 megs of memory that we had added in, but by getting an IBM, this opened up a lot more possibilities. The programs were a little bit more in-depth on the IBM. I'm not sure where David got that computer now that I think about it, and maybe I don't want to ask that. But right after that, we sat down and decided this is how we were going to make our BBS. Well, the funny thing about David, too, was David was somebody who was homeschooled, so when I went off to school in the daytime, he stayed home, and his parents were never there. I may have added to the craziness. But basically, he would stay home all day, and he would do all the research. I'd come home with the creative ideas and that I was doing in math class instead of working, and together we would build this BBS. Well, he got a hold of a program, and the program was called VBBS. For those of you BBS fans out there who may have crossed paths with this, this was a program that enabled us to basically customize everything. We were able to go in and make little pictures for our title screens. We were able to customize how our menus came up, and of course, we were able to customize how the games interact and how uploads and downloads happened. And so the two of us got together and we ended up making a BBS, which we called Ender's Palace. I was the system operator, the sysop, and of course my little handle, your handle back then was basically what your login name would be. Like if you log into a game and you change your name and you have some little fantasy name in, like say, EverQuest, that was your handle. And so my handle was Ender, and yes, that was a blatant reference to Orson Scott Card's Ender's Game. And then David's handle was Roulette, and he was the co-sysop, meaning that he also had administrative abilities. He could change things around in the program anytime he wanted, which would make sense, of course, since this computer was pretty much in his house. And so he got an extra phone line, and we started messing around with this bulletin board program, and then, next thing you know, Ender's Palace went online. Well, for us, this was a big deal. We didn't have a lot of people at first calling us, because, you know, we were pretty new. Eventually, what ended up happening is that we moved the computer over to my house, and I ended up getting the second phone line and ran it out of my basement, which is where my bedroom was. You know, we'd have one or two people calling at a time, which was to us was very cool. It was very cool to be able to play these games and have somebody call into us. And back then, running this program on your computer, you could actually see firsthand what they were doing because only one person could call in at a time. So you could sit there and kind of watch what they were doing, watch the moves they were making. I tried not to do that for every game because that's cheap. But another cool thing that we did back then with the BBSs, and this is another thing that basically was kind of a precursor to the internet, they had what was kind of an early network ability, basically an early internet. And what would happen is you could send email to somebody far away, like say overseas. Because what would happen is you could sign up to be part of a different network. And one of the most popular back then was one called FidoNet. And with FidoNet, what would happen is you'd basically sign up to be a member of FidoNet. Your bulletin board system would be part of it. And what would happen is somebody could send email to somebody else in the FidoNet community. And then what it would do is basically chain call. You would call somebody local to you. That person would call somebody local to them. And this would daisy chain until it made its way around the world, literally. This usually happened about 3 a.m. And so what would happen is you'd send your email about 3 a.m. Your computer would all of a sudden get a call from somebody else. And then you'd send it on to somebody else. And lo and behold, we were able to send email overseas before there was actually an internet, which was very cool to us. It was kind of neat to be able to talk to people overseas for the first time. And this is the part where the story gets kind of interesting. I ran the BBS for about 2 to 3 years. Well, in my senior year, I started dating a girl in high school named Lauren. Well, her brother was big into computers, and his name was Jackie. And Jackie had muscular dystrophy. He was in a wheelchair, and most of the time he was confined to his house. But the thing was, he was a very charismatic person. He loved computers. He loved talking to people, and people just loved him. And so when I started dating his sister, I kind of brought the whole BBS idea onto him and said, hey, you know what? This is perfect for you. You're so creative. You're good at what you do, and people love you. You're the perfect person to have a BBS. So I passed on some of the info. He went and got himself a computer as well and ended up making his own bulletin board system. His was called Blackheart's Domain, and he did it up like a little fantasy theme where he was this Minotaur Lord in this dungeon-themed BBS. He was very creative, and so he was able to make these really elaborate pictures, these really elaborate menus, and I admit, his put mine to shame. people just loved him to death. I mean, all of a sudden he was one of the most popular BBSs in the Detroit area back then. And for him, it was perfect because he loved talking to people, and this enabled him to be able to still interact and have this really cool social life with everybody else. And of course, he got online and we played the games together and had a great time. And Jackie ran that BBS for quite some time, and God bless his heart, a couple years ago he did pass away. But it was really cool to be part of that with him and share that with him and kind of watch these things that he was able to do. One thing that was kind of interesting back then, too, that just made me think of this. Back then, when we were both running our BBSs, a bunch of the people in the Detroit area who ran BBSs basically decided to all get together and go to this beach nearby. We all were going to... This was probably during the summer. If I'm remembering right, I think this was like July. But we all basically got together at a beach, had this giant picnic of all these different BBS sysops from around the area. And this is kind of cool because I didn't think about this till recently, but basically, this get-together was kind of like the precursor to a lot of the fanfares you see nowadays. A lot of the little get-together for these people who play games like EverQuest. So we got together at this beach, had a great time, got to kind of share ideas, and it was kind of neat to be able to put faces with a lot of these system operators, and you'd be shocked at how diverse these people were. I mean, when you think of computers, especially back then, it tended to have a stereotype where when you thought of a computer guy, you pictured the guy who's on the Best Buy commercial for the Geek Squad. A lot of these guys who ran the bulletin boards were trucker types. I mean, we had a guy who was like a 50-year-old guy who ran it because he was retired and he loved to do this. And there was, of course, younger kids. There were kids that were younger than me. There was a kid, I think, there who was about 16 years old, completely insane, but oh well. And everybody loved Jackie. When we got together, everybody was just coming up to Jackie saying, "It's so great to meet you." And it was just a great time to be able to do that. And I look fondly on those times. I miss back when it was kind of a more one-on-one type of a thing. I mean, nowadays, the internet's so big and everything's just so out there and anybody can grab a hold of it and do whatever they want. It's almost like we kind of lost that little one-on-one personable kind of feel that we have to it. But in so many ways, especially with those bulletin board games, you can totally see how they set the stage for these games that we have now. Back then, I did actually try to make a game of my own. That's what I think my first interest in online game programming first started. I actually was going to be a game programmer. I didn't end up doing it because I had a hard time with sitting in a cubicle, but my interest is still stuck around to this day. I ended up being able to learn Pascal and C++, and it was all because of these BBS games. What I wanted to do was make a little RPG, and it was written in Pascal, and I was going to make it for my bulletin board. I never got very far in it, but it was a really cool game. It had the little symbols would be the little shapes. It was kind of like a little side-scrolling RPG, little fantasy style, and you had your little character who moved across, and I had different shapes and colors to represent like the torches on the wall or the doors that you could go into. And it was really neat because since BBSs had to redraw the screen every time they refreshed, I was able to do some really fancy stuff. Like when it would get dark, I made it so that you could have the little sky get dark and stars would come out. And you know, back then it was really innovative. At least I thought it was. I thought it was so cool. So I mean, I'd dork around and make it go day to night every time, like 20 times over and over. And I thought it was so cool, but never got very far with it. But it was fun to do back then. And I know a lot of this is just kind of little sentimental stuff, mainly about how I came into the BBSing stuff from my point of view. But hopefully, maybe you got something out of it. Maybe you got kind of a feel of what it was like to be part of the BBS gaming back then, or learn what it was like to log into a BBS. Because honestly, I seriously believe a lot of those programmers who are making the games now were people who grow up on that stuff, or even maybe learn to program on stuff like a bulletin board, or maybe those text mods that came out shortly after that. Well, one of the things I wanted to do in this episode is talk with somebody else who was around back then, who kind of played with the BBSs the way that I did. And we were fortunate to get Sean from Guildcast, who I found out was a big BBS gamer just like I was. So he and I sat down, we talked a little bit about the games we played and what we liked about BBSs, and even kind of touched a little bit on how we think that the internet may have been influenced by it. And here it is. Well, we have with us on the show a great honor of having Sean from Guildcast on the show today. And he's here. He's going to talk with me a little bit about what we remember from back in the bulletin board days, back in the BBS days, the games we played and the games we loved. So glad to have you on the show, Sean. Welcome.
Oh, thanks a lot. Yeah, it's always good to talk about the old days of gaming.
So, let's start with what you remember about BBSs back in the day. How did you first start getting into the whole BBS genre?
I remember my best friend actually ran a BBS for a while back on a Commodore 64, and I think the modem he used, if I'm not mistaken, was 900 baud, I'm almost positive. I'm thinking that's what it was. And I remember his dad also ran one. Well, it was the same one. His dad was the sysop for it. And but his dad got a little, you know, his dad would work every day and everything. So my friend would basically take it over, and he got into it. And then I didn't really get into it then, because I saw what was going on, and it was just a bunch of basically green text on a screen, and I was like, you know, well, that's kind of boring, because I wanted to go play my Commodore 64 games that I had, you know.
Oh yeah.
That's what I was into. So eventually he showed me the text-based games, you know, like Zork and Legend of the Red Dragon, and I remember there's one called Junkyard, and a few other ones that he showed me, and then I really started getting into them, especially Zork. I remember really getting into that one.
Oh yes.
But I remember the day when he upgraded to a 1200 baud modem. It was like, it was like the most wonderful thing in the entire world. It's like 1200 baud. That's going to be crazy. How are we going to put up with so much speed? But it's incredible to think how much things have changed.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's funny you should say that, because the first computer I was doing BBSs on, and I talked about this a little bit in the intro part of the show, is I was using an Atari 800 with, believe it or not, a 300 baud modem. And so that little, you know, that little cursor was just real slowly moving across the screen. But you know, back then we were just blown away that we were talking to somebody else.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But and when my friend he ended up upgrading it to another, you know, same type of company, same kind of modem plugged in the back of the Atari 800, and it was a 1200 baud modem. And I remember watching that little cursor just move faster and faster. And we were just like, oh, now we can play. You know, just out of curiosity, you said your friend he ran a BBS. What do you remember? Which program it was? Which BBS program he used?
No, I'm not. I want to say like Color 64, I think, was what it was called. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not positive, though. I'd have to ask him. But yeah, I think it was called Color 64 or something like that.
Right on, right on. Yeah, now, you know, and I miss the Commodore 64 so very much.
Oh yeah, me too.
I foresee us having an episode, and you know, I know that mostly this podcast is mostly looking about like the games that influence the online games, uh-huh. And there's a couple things as far as the Commodore 64 where I so put that into that category, where you know, games like Zork and that type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
I totally see a Zork episode coming up very soon. So,
well, not only that, I mean, the Commodore 64. That was my first experience with online gaming, and it's exactly like you said, where you're like, wow, there's other people out there playing with me right now. And I remember playing a like a Mech Warrior type game. I don't remember what it was called, but I remember it might have been called Mech Warrior, but it was that type of genre, and that was the first graphic based online game that I'd ever played, and that was on a Commodore 64. So yeah, I could imagine you could have a whole show on the Commodore 64, the online aspect of it, you know, and that.
Oh
that'd
yeah.
Be interesting.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and we'll have to run with that, because yeah, seriously, you know, when it's amazing with graphics nowadays. It's so funny to look back and see what people did with the little ANSI graphics, you know, a couple little symbols and a couple of colors, and they were coming up with some of the most elaborate pictures.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, the way that the little happy O letter would all of a sudden be your guy, and you'd be walking around this little text-based world of little ANSI graphics, and so I have so many fond memories of those games we used to play from back then. And one of the ones I remember playing a lot was, did you ever play any of the there was actually the company made two games. There was one called Solar Realms, and then there was one called Barren Realms. And what it was kind of like a Trade Wars style game, where you'd have a like, for example, in Solar Realms, you might have a planet, and you were harvesting materials on it, and you would build more ships to harvest more planets.
Oh.
And in Barren Realms, it would be more of like a post-Holocaust, cyberpunk kind of a thing, where you were building, you know, after a nuclear war, you were going back and rebuilding these cities and that type. And I just remember playing that for just... It was one of those kind of games where they only gave you like 20 turns per night or whatever. But
oh, yeah, yeah.
The things you could do with those 20 turns, and you'd run back the next day and be like, okay, what happened while I was gone?
Yeah.
You know? just out of curiosity, what are some of the games that you would say were your favorite games, even to like the ANSI style games?
As far as the BBS, Legend of the Red Dragon was definitely my favorite. I played that a lot, and that had that same thing like you just said, where you get 20 turns, and then you just reminded me of that. I'm like, oh yeah, because I remember the anticipation where you would have to stop after a certain amount of time. I forgot what it was, if it was like 20 minutes or 20 turns or something like that, where they would make you wait until the next day. And I remember going on there, and you have to keep checking. Like, it had a countdown till the next time, the next game day, when you can play again. And I remember that the anticipation of that was just incredible. And I guess they did that on a lot of those games, I guess to eliminate, you know, burnout or having people get addicted to these things or something, you know.
That's true. Well, plus, and I think if I'm remembering, you know, even back then, there were a lot of these, we hadn't quite gotten to the actual true multiplayer game yet. I mean, we had a lot of these games, the BBS is only one person could log in at a time, and it could be that maybe these games were limited in to make sure that they weren't going to hog the game from everybody else.
Yeah, that's true,
Yeah, let's talk about Legend of the Red Dragon in particular, because for a lot of the people who've played BBS games back in the day, that's the one that they remember the most, and I'm no exception. I remember, one of the things I remember most about that game was, you know, it was your typical text-based RPG, but what was so brilliant about it was it had a lot of things that were totally outside the box, a lot of things you could do that weren't your typical RPG stuff you could do, and the beauty of it was that people could take little plugins and add their own little segments to the game, like they might take a tavern and make some functionality that where the bartender was interactive now. And I remember half the fun of Legend of the Red Dragon for me was the fact that you could go in as a system operator and go handpick all these little plugins that could add this new functionality or go write your own, and all of a sudden you had this like full-on customized game that was your own.
Oh, I never even messed with that. I guess that's like the first mod community for online gaming.
It really is. A lot of people put that in Doom's court. You know, that's where a lot of the Doom modding came. But you know what? I'll have to do some research on that. But Legend of the Red Dragon may have been one of the first true moddable style games in that regard, especially online anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
For our listeners out there who've never played Legend of the Red Dragon, do you want to give a little background on what it was all about?
Well, I remember you started out, it had the levels, and I think it maxed out at like 12 or something like that. Started out, I remember there was explorable areas, like there was the forest, and you could go to like taverns, and they had a training ground, I remember. Oh, the fields. I remember the fields were, that was like the first ever PvP, I guess you could say. It was where you could actually play against another player. You go out
to
the fields,
right,
and you can meet another player and actually fight them. And that was incredible. Oh, upgradable weapons and armor. I remember that. That was huge. When you could get, I mean, that was, you know, in role-playing games forever, but the fact that it was, it had so many aspects of, like I played AD&D back then, and then I played this game kind of simultaneously, and it was incredible that this game was the same thing as I was playing, you know, on pencil and paper with my friends, and it was, you didn't have to make it up, you know, it was there, it was in the game, and you could use your imagination, and it's really amazing how even now, you know, a lot of these text-based games like this are web-based now, like Zork. Maybe it's just because of my age, I don't know, but I can go on there and I could still have as much fun as I do on a heavily graphic-based game, you know, because you're using your imagination, and you know, not to get too deep into this and philosophical, but people don't really do that anymore, you know, and it's really incredible, I think.
It's, you know, and that brings up a good point. You know, a lot of people today, I think a lot of the newer style gamers, you know, they, when they came into the gameplay, you know, they'd already had the good graphics and a lot of the imagination part had been taken out. And I think, you know, this is a, you know, an odd side theory, but, you know, we talk about how the game players today, they're, you know, they tend to be a little more
rambunctious.
Rambunctious, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, and the reason it could be because, you know, for a lot of us older gamers, you know, when we first started playing, a lot of the game was in our mind, and we were reading text and that type of thing, and maybe because of that, because we were, a lot of this was in our mind and we were really forming a lot of this adventure, it was more real to us in some ways, and we had sort of an inadvertent respect for it. Mm-hmm. Whereas, today, you know, a lot of these newer players, they have, you know, the great graphics and the great gameplay, and you know, and let's be honest, the graphics are great, but sometimes the gameplay doesn't seem to have quite the depth that a lot of the text games could.
Yeah.
And maybe they're taking a lot of that, you know, a little bit, you know, without meaning to, they're taking a little bit for granted, and they're not realizing now, you know, how good they have it now as opposed to how we did back then.
Very true.
That, if there was something about the BBSs and the BBS games that you say would have set the stage for online games that we have now, a lot of similarities, what would you say that you saw in games back then that to this day, you know, you still see in games now, like they built on top of it?
I think, like, back then in Legend of the Red Dragon, they had a messaging system, like an email system, which mm-hmm. is kind of cool. It actually, I think it was before email, before official. Well, not
you
before,
might have been right.
Yeah, not before like real email, but before like web email, I guess you could say. But they had message boards, which were basically what the BBSs were all about anyway. And you could go on there, and they actually did trading and things like that. And I think what was funny, too, is they had interaction with other players, which would bring you to the inevitable things like flirting, you know, where you, at least you would think you're flirting with a female and you're probably actually flirting with another male, but they had actually flirting, and there was marriage in Legend of the Red Dragon, which is amazing because it's they kind of didn't go back to that until The Sims, you know.
Oh yeah, this is true. Later. Yeah, this sort of set the stage for that, huh?
Yeah, but there's a lot of things actually that they did in this game, but like also the registration, they had a registration system where you could play up to a certain point. And then you had to actually register to go any further in the game. And they're doing that in MMOs today, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because especially the games that are like either the ones that are free to play up until a point. If you want to progress to a certain point beyond that, you pay for it. And yeah, you know, it's funny because I remember when I first started running a BBS, you know, having some of these games, and they'd say, oh, you know, try it if you like it. And I was thinking, oh, no problem, you know, I'll just play it. And people, you know, you get so into it, you'd be like, oh, I have to register it, because you get your character to that level, and they get you really good at that level, and then you're like, okay, now I have to get it, because now I got to find out what happens here. Yeah, and just looking back here at some of the things that Legend of the Red Dragon, you can already see they had the inn where you could go and you could meet all the different characters, and that's where you would usually, you know, rent the room for the night, or you could talk to other players.
Yeah.
And that's something that you even see to this day. You know, the inn has always been, you know, a center place of online gaming. So and that's usually the place where most players would be hanging out, or you'd be able to talk to them. And then of course the armor and weapon shop where you could buy and sell your armor. That was something I remember that Legend of the Red Dragon had.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, another thing is they had in the forest, you'd go out to the forest and you would have random encounters, which was something that you couldn't really do. It really didn't pertain to the multiplayer thing, but you had the random encounters, which were pretty sophisticated for that day, you know, for back then. I don't know when this game came out. Do you know? I think...
You know what? Let's see here. Yeah, there's going to be...
It says... Oh, 1989?
It came out in 1989.
The bottom
Holy
of the
cow.
Page. See, I remember playing it... I was in college, so it was probably about 93, 94. Mm-hmm. And I actually played it on a Mac, when I had a Mac. And, man, I still remember Performa 630. That old Mac. but that's how I played it. I played it like that. And back in the Commodore days, I didn't play Legend of the Red Dragon back then. We mainly just used the message board system. Didn't really do too many games. But yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was, it had to have been about 93, 94. So I was a little bit late to the game, actually.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny you should mention that, because, like, I think 93, 94 was right about when I first started playing. And I, you know, I came in late to the whole BBS thing as well, because when I, you know, I had a friend who, when he got the modem, you know, the modem was new to me, and I'd never really messed with it. And you know, it's kind of funny looking back at it, but you always had this fear that if you called somebody with your computer, you were going to get in trouble somehow. I remember my friend calling this bulletin board. I'm like, can you do that? Are the police going to, are they going to come after you for this? Is this like War Games? Are you calling somebody's computer, you know? And I remember when he started showing me all these different bulletin boards, and funny enough, I think the first bulletin board I was visiting was one from a computer store a couple miles over. It was called Right Way Computers, which, funny enough, I don't even think it even exists anymore. I think they were like one of the last of the Amiga software sellers from Detroit back in the day. But I remember when the first time he showed me all this online stuff, the fact that, you know, you could send this mail to other people, and the idea of electronic mail, I think that might have been the first time I came across that.
Yeah.
The idea that you could send this mail to somebody else. And I remember me and my friend, we would jump into these games, and then I'd jump in and play a game like Legend of the Red Dragon, and I'd do my take my turns and do my couple things, and then I'd jump out and I'd call him up and like, okay, now jump in, now do your stuff, and we'll coordinate, you know. And we'd we'd have these coordinated attacks like in these strategy games, or we'd try to work together in Legend of the Red Dragon. It's almost bringing tears to the eyes talking about this. Yeah, seriously, I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah, there's a little screenshot they have here. I've got to add that to the little blog site. My goodness.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny. You mentioned about the calling, you know, calling the computer store. Man, you just reminded me. I remember doing that. The computer store near our house, man, I still remember. It's called Miller's Computers. And they had a BBS also, and we would call them directly and set it up. And I remember, man, we used to... like, you know when you're little and you prank call people?
Oh, yeah.
Things like that, yeah. We used to that.
I said, oh, yeah, a little too happy there.
Yeah. You're like, oh, yeah, I just did that last week. No, but, you know, and we would do that, and every once in a while you get the modem tones, you know, the tone pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got that, my friend was always like, they got a modem. Let's call them directly, you know. And then he thought, like, we could be hackers and we could, like, you know, break into their... their computers or something. And we were like little punk hacker wannabe kids, and it was just hilarious, you know.
Well, that feeling of power you had when you called somebody and you were like, oh my gosh, I just linked with their computer.
Yeah, yeah.
can I play Global Thermonuclear War? I don't know. Yeah, and I think one of the things too is one of my fondest memories of bulletin boards, and this kind of I honestly believe, you know, I've always been into role playing games from the beginning, even from a young age, and I've always been into, you know, computer games themselves. But I think what really set the stage as far as my love for online games, because I, you know, a lot of my friends, they're, you know, the online thing just isn't it for them. They prefer the single player. They like to have their own little world. Yeah. What I believe set the stage for me was back in the day. I used to be part of a little television group. We got paid to go film like the high school football games, and one of my favorite things to do on the fall, this was in the fall in Detroit, you know, real cold, you know, we'd go out there, we'd be out there till filming these games till way late at night, and I'd come home and I jumped on this BBS. It was called the Gateway BBS, and I remember it being a big deal because it was one of the first BBSs that let multiple people on at once. And back then, god, this was like 92 93, at least from what I saw back then, that was a really big deal to have more than one person at a time. And I think they had like 20. And we'd get together in these chat rooms, which at that time for me was totally new. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm talking to these real people. And I'd come home from these football games, and it's funny that I link that with this, but I'd come home with these football games, it'd be real late at night, and I'd jump on and everybody be up and talking, and it'd be like going from the wedding to like the party at the bar afterward. And we'd just sit there and just BS about whatever. Oh, you go see this movie, go see this. And after that, I think that's when I started to realize the possibility of how online games could be so great. The idea that, you know, you add a game to this and you win. And you know, sure enough, it wasn't even, I didn't predict it'd be that quick, but, you know, it wasn't even a couple years later that all of a sudden they're announcing, 3 years later, they're announcing Ultima Online, and Meridian 59 had already started coming out already. And, you know, you just look at how it's blown up from there. Is it any wonder that online games have taken off the way they have?
Oh, yeah. And you know, I remember, I think BBSs to me, at least when I was in college around 93, 94, was the alternative to the chat rooms. Like, I have to admit, I went on AOL back then. I'm a recovering AOL. But and that was back when AOL charged by the hour, which is insane when I think about it. But that was when I went on BBSs, that was my free alternative to the insane. I mean, it's crazy. Some of the phone bills I had, geez. And so I would go on BBSs, and it was like you said, but that was, I think by that time, it was already where they could let multiple people on at once, because I remember talking, you know, in these little rooms with all these people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was one of the biggest draws to me, why I kept going back, not only because of the games, but also, like you said, because of the chat room aspect of it, because AOL was charged by the hour. Did you ever play one called Junkyard?
Junkyard. You know, that sounds familiar. What was that, it like?
It was, let me see if I can remember. See, I tried looking it up on Wikipedia and they didn't even have it, but it was basically like a big junk pile, and you went on this big junk pile and you would fight people on the junk pile, and you would find like you would scavenge around and you would find different items, and then you had to build things from the items you found. And you never knew, like, the items weren't normal things, like you wouldn't find a battery or something. It would be called a power something converter or whatever. And you would have to figure out what it was, and then you'd have to build something. And I don't remember what we had to build exactly, but I just remember it was so cool because it was like MacGyver or something, you know?
Right.
And but you also had to fight these people, and I remember there being like a, I want to say like a junk master or something like that, like a guy who's like the leader of the junkyard or something like that, and you had to fight him. See, it's sketchy in my mind, but I just remember that game, and that one I played a lot.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that blows my mind about these BBS games, looking back, is that a lot of these games, you know, and this just goes to show the power of text, you know, versus the power of graphics, is back then, you know, we always had, most of these games were made by one person, and they were always constantly updated. They put their heart and soul into it, and you could tell by the gameplay alone some of the ways that these guys, I mean, back then you didn't have to worry about graphics, you didn't have to worry mm-hmm. about textures. All you did was make the game, and a lot of this was, I guess back then, it was probably written mostly in Pascal.
Yeah.
But I remember back then, like, a lot of these guys would just be pouring out constant updates. You know, not like nowadays where you have to wait 5 years for a game to finally come out and a year for an expansion. Back then, they were coming out with little add-ons, like, almost weekly.
Yeah.
Do you remember a game called Arena? It was a simple game, and I remember it was on a lot of BBSs, especially on the ones that were, like, Commodore-run BBSs. And it was a little game where you had your little barbarian or whatever, you were a gladiator, and you could go in and you could buy weapons and armor, and you would basically, your character would go fight other characters that were in the arena, and a lot of these guys were offline. And so what would happen is you'd go in and you could go attack these guys, and you could do it a certain, you know, a certain strategic way, and then while you had a certain amount of moves you could do, and then when you were done and you logged off, but you could still watch the leaderboards, and other people would come in and challenge your guy to a fight, and your guy would fight based on how you configured him. He would fight to defend himself while you were gone, and then you would come back the next day and the little leaderboard will have moved, and you might come back, and I remember one day I came back and was like, check it out, I'm number one, and we were like, I was so happy, and it lasted probably like 15 minutes before some jerk with tons more points than me came and whipped me. But I remember for that one moment I was like, I am the king, you know.
Yeah, I don't remember that one, but I do remember games like that where you could be offline and someone could fight you, and then you come back the next day and you'd be like, you know, oh, hey, I moved up, or I moved down, or, you know, I'm dead, or something, and you had nothing to do with it.
Yes, oh, God, one of my favorite games of all time on the BBSs was a game called Land of Devastation. I don't know if you've ever got a chance, have you ever checked that one out?
No, I never.
It was a post-Holocaust game, and it was written by one guy, and yeah, we might end up having this in its own episode. We'll have to see. But I remember one of the greatest things about it. It had certain things that were so perfect for it, because it took place in a post-Holocaust world after World War III, and one player could log in at a time, and he featured a combination of top-down little ANSI graphics that were tile-based. So, you know, you had your little comma symbol might be water and it would be blue, you know, or you'd have like a little H that might be a house. And what he did was you'd go into the city and you could go and buy armor and you'd buy lasers, and you could also buy a little laptop to take with you, and you could plug little programs, and one of the programs might be it would manage your food and water intake, another might be a little GPS. You could go out into this post-Holocaust world, and the idea was that the players, to an extent, were collectively trying to find these chips that would basically rebuild this machine that could make the world pure again. It would take away all the radiation out of the world and make it green. Problem was that it had been spread all across, you know, what was left of the United States. You'd go through the world, you know, typical RPG where you'd go fight things, and my favorite part about it that I think may have set the stage for some of the stuff we have nowadays, and this goes back to what you were talking about with, you know, with things happening while you were offline. One of the things you could do is you could get enough money to purchase a base. You had all these customizable options, like, right, your base might just be one room, and it might be a place to store your stuff. But the problem is, while you were gone, people could attack your base, and so you could build, say, a little moat with an alligator in it. And the guy could come try to take your base, and he had to get past the alligator or whatever, and then you could upgrade to, like, laser fencing or gun turrets. Huh. And all of a sudden, this base, you could eventually, you know, guilds could get together and build their base even better and gather up their money, and they would have, like, teleporters to the city or places where they had offline vendors that while they were gone, they could have this vendor sell their stuff. I remember that was one of the funnest parts about it, you know, was the fact that you could build this house and customize it, and people could try to attack your base, and you'd come back the next day, and it'd say, like, so-and-so tried to attack your base, and he failed, and your little robots went out and took his stuff. Yeah, that's just looking at that, I can see where a lot of stuff we have nowadays, like the whole customizable guild hall might have, you know, been maybe not directly influenced, but that, you know, same type of thinking.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned earlier, you touched on something about the ANSI graphics and how they added that later to, like, Legend of the Red Dragon. And I think back before they did that, especially when I would play a lot of the, like when I played Junkyard and things like that, like when I'm describing it right now, I can still see that image in my mind that I had in my mind when I played the game. And I want to describe, like when we describe the inn, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, they had the inn and they had that one part over here with the, you know, with the bartender and he was over in that corner. But I didn't really see that stuff. You know what I mean? It's just amazing that when I describe it now from my mind's eye, that I can still access that memory as visual almost. You know what I mean? And it's just incredible. And that's a testament to the writers of these BBS games, you know?
You know, it kind of plays into the text mods. You know, I've played about every online game that I could get my hands on from the beginning. And it's funny how much, like you said, you know, it's funny, like later on, the games we played later, it's funny how much you forget. And yet, here it is, some of those text mods where they give you such an incredible description. You know, I can't totally remember everywhere I ran to in Anarchy Online, but I can tell you every single location in Zork that was nearby that White House, you know? If you could pick one memory in one of these BBS games, what would you say was your favorite memory?
Well, actually, I think the thing that maybe struck me the most, it's not so much that it was like a favorite experience or, I mean, a favorite like moment or anything like that, but I think, or it wasn't like a favorite quest, but I think as far as my favorite experience with the BBS games was, like I mentioned earlier about the way that they would make you stop and then you had to play again the next day. That anticipation, I remember how powerful that was. Because there were times when I would try to make a strategy to try to think of how could I get the most out of my playing time. And I would actually try to play from the time, you know, right before the game's day was over. And then the game's day would end and then I'd be able to play again. But then I'd be like, no, now I got to wait another 24 hours before I can play again. You know, but that anticipation right there, that experience was so frustrating for me, it was just one of those things where it was like, it was, that really sticks in my mind as a powerful emotion, you know, for those BBS games. Everything else was fun, and it was, it all led up to that, though. I think, you know, the culmination of the fun in the game, and I think most of the games I played were actually like that. I think, I know Legend of the Red Dragon was like that, and I think that Junkyard game was like that, too, where you had to stop, you know, just chew your fingernails off waiting for the next day, you know, but that was pretty intense, I think.
Oh yeah. Well, and you know, it's one of the things that I remember too, being one of the most bittersweet things about it, because there was a game that I used to love too. It was called Imperium, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, ANSI style graphics, and it was supposed to be just kind of an all around, just a giant strategic war game where you had your little units and you could move them one base, kind of like the old style hexagon based strategy games.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the things I remember is you would make your moves and you'd set up your army and maybe you'd see somebody else's army nearby you, and the whole time, like you said, you know, you'd be chewing your nails just like in anticipation, just waiting for that moment to come back where you could be like, what happened while I was gone, what happened? And you'd come back in and your army was in the middle of a war, your half your guys would be wiped out, and you're like, that's it, you're gone. And then you'd have to like plan out this, how the next week was gonna play out, like, okay, dude, I'm gonna rebuild my army, and then right after that, tomorrow when I can play, I'm gonna get reinforcements built up and I'm gonna go back and get him. And nothing beat that feeling that, yeah, you know, you put all this daily effort into it, and by the end of the week, you just wipe the guy back out on his side. And, you know, as bittersweet as it was kind of cool to be able to know that you had to wait to come back and play it. It almost made you kind of rethink. You weren't as quick to do stupid things. Like in games nowadays, they can kind of jump in how and when they please. So you get a lot of, you know, maybe players who tend to do kind of sillier things, like they might start, you know, going after new players or messing with people or just mouthing off. And,
yeah, yeah.
And I think back then, because our time was so limited, you know, we were more likely to take, you know, spend it much more wisely. You know, you didn't see that kind of behavior. Everybody was dead serious, and if they weren't serious, they were dead. They would get wiped out in within the first 2 days and just go play a different game anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming onto the show and talking to us about your BBS memories, and I'm sure that when we get to that episode about the Gold Box game, and it is coming because it was an influence of the online games of today. When we get to that episode, well, you'll be back for sure.
Sweet. I can't wait.
Golly, that sure is interesting.
And how? Without the BBSs and BBS games of yesterday, you probably wouldn't be playing those online games you're playing today.
Wow, so without the influence of BBSs, I wouldn't be able to gank noobs outside of Desolus.
Right you are, little Judy. And without online gaming today, we'd probably still be listening to New Kids on the Block and watching episodes of Full House.
Gee, mister, now I know.
And knowing is half the battle. That was awkward.
After listening to that interview, it brought back so many memories of these games I used to play back then, and I wish I had the time to be able to go into each and every one of them. There were so many back then that were so much fun that would be notable. You know, games like Trade Wars, where it was a space strategy game, which you can totally see that there is this relation between Trade Wars back in the day and what we have as EVE Online today. Or D&D-style games like Legend of the Red Dragon, where you can see today there's a lot of those fantasy-style games that may have been influenced even slightly by a game like that. Those were good times. Good times. And even though we live in this internet world now where we have the internet at our fingertips and we can play all these wonderful online games, it is kind of cool to look back to when online gaming was a little simpler and it was a little bit more imaginative. And hopefully in listening to this, you got a real good idea of maybe what that was like and why that was so special to those of us who were part of it. And of course, in future episodes of this show, you're probably going to see us touch on some of those BBS games directly. Games like Land of Devastation, you've heard me like at least 4 times in this episode mention that I'd love to do an episode just based on that, and that probably will happen. After all, this podcast really is about nostalgia, about online gaming nostalgia. But that pretty much brings us to the end of episode 3. Now, at this point in the show is where I would give a hint a little bit about what the next show was going to be about. I'm not going to do that this time, and I'll tell you why. Tomorrow night, funny enough, I'm actually flying out to good old Detroit again, and the reason for it was basically to visit my father who's in the hospital. But what occurred to me is while I'm out there, I can take my MP3 recorder and go hook up with some of these old friends, like my friend Kevin, who's the one who introduced me to the Commodore games, or my friend Jim, who I grew up playing Ultima with, and of course the infamous David Sperry. If I could track him down, that would be hysterical. You guys would get a kick out of him. So what I'm hoping to be able to do is go out there with this recorder and come back with some great material for future episodes. I know we're going to be talking about Ultima Online, the Ultima games themselves, and maybe even pop in with a few more BBS stories that David Sperry remembers. So stay tuned, because when I come back, I'm going to have some great things to talk about. But in the meantime, call into our Skype line. Let us know what you thought of the episode. Let us know your favorite memories from these games back in the day. Doesn't necessarily have to be the one we talked about, but you know what? If you have some great BBS memories, call into our Skype line and leave it on our little messaging system and tell us what you thought about it. Our Skype line username is the Online Gamers Anthology, or you can email it to us at theonlinegamersanthology@gmail.com. And of course, check out our blog site, which is theonlinegamersanthology.wordpress.com. And there, that's where our visual companion to the show is. That's where we show a lot of our screenshots, a lot of our photos. Yeah, lately it's been kind of sparse, but like I said, hopefully when I come back from Detroit, I'll be able to come back with some photographs from back in the day, maybe some BBS pictures, and as these shows go on, you're going to see more and more stuff go on there. But at the end of the show here, I wanted to give a quick shout-out for 2 reasons. One is the fact that I'm going to Michigan, which is, if you ever listen to Voyages of Vanguard or Equal Perspectives, you know Troy, and Troy actually lives out there too, and that made me think of that. The fact that I'm going out to Detroit made me think of Troy. But the other reason is because Troy actually just had his 20th episode of Voyages of Vanguard go out. So today's shout-out, I want to give a shout-out to Troy. If you haven't checked out his podcast, you must check it out. Vanguard is one of those games that is such a great game, and I honestly believe it is going to have this massive second coming, and people are going to go right for it. And Troy is somebody who will keep you totally influenced, totally on top of what's happening out there in the gaming world with Vanguard, and he's got a passion for that game that most people don't have with games. And be sure to check out Troy's blog. It's emeraldtablet.wordpress.com. There, Troy talks to you about whatever's on his mind, be it Vanguard or games in general. Troy actually wrote a couple modules for different role-playing games back in the day. You'll find that very fascinating. He's a great writer. So that's my shout-out for today. So be sure to check out Troy's podcast, and congratulations, Troy, on your 20th episode. So until the next episode, we'll see you next time, and I'll see you when I get back from Detroit. And do me a favor, cross your fingers for me, would you? Every time I go to visit my family in Detroit, the Detroit Red Wings always end up losing horribly, and I would really love for them to have the Stanley Cup this year. But hey, I digress.